Welcome to MGO Podcast 6.2. Kalu, Kale. Oh, what a frab just day. Is it too soon to call it VB Day? Do we have any World War II veterans listening to this podcast? If so, we apologize. But we did just reenact the famous, like, you came home from the war kiss. We didn't. I'm sorry.
I mean, yeah, it was in spirit more than
yes, in spirit. So yes, we talked with John Bacon quite a lot because he's in here for Janie Morris's show right before we taped this. And, we heard yet more just stories. It's amazing how they come out of the woodwork.
Yeah, there's been a lot of those lately coming out of the woodwork.
Well, you know, the crazy thing about Brandon is, you know, I have opinions about Brandon, but I don't bring those up in real life because people would not like me if I told them what I thought because of the vehemence. But even so, like, these stories kind of followed me around. So I tore my ACL a few years back and I was rehabbing it. And I was at the rehab place when a guy walked in completely steamed because he no longer had a job with the athletic department. And instead, they had hired a trainer who was literally right out of school.
Ooh.
Because the guy right out of school doesn't know anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy right out of school
is not going to say no to somebody who's...
Right. Yeah. Has personal loyalty to the guy who hired him instead of the department,
yes.
Instead of the community.
Yeah.
So that was the strategy that I heard a lot about. And now the community seems to have a weight taken off of it.
Yes.
So you were in the press box. How was that?
I'll put it this way. It was a lot lighter of an atmosphere than it has been for any other game this season. It actually felt like people were somewhat excited to be there, not necessarily for the football team, but just kind of to – people seemed like they were just coming up there just really interested to see what the atmosphere would be like. And then, of course, Bacon's up there. His press pass has been reinstated. And so, you know, a lot of people going over and chatting up John and saying hi and seeing how he's been doing.
You have his old seat, though, right?
I do, and I'm not giving it up yet.
Did you tell him that? Did you tell him that the student has now become the master?
I didn't go that far, but it was implied.
It's good. At least you implied it.
So I told him that the spirit lived on in that seat. I thought that was appropriate, but yeah, it was. I mean, there were certainly a lot of people there that seemed to be a little happier to be there than they had been previous weeks.
Yeah. Well, you know, people are going to accuse me of grave dancing because that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Like right now on this podcast, but, you know, there's a post coming. There's a wrap-up post.
I'm very much looking forward to it.
I may sell unedited versions of this post for $50 as an ebook.
I'd buy it.
Oh, man.
Maybe that'll be a Kickstarter incentive for next year's
ATTV. That's simultaneously a really good idea because I would make a lot of money, and a really bad idea because...
For reasons that we can all probably imagine right now.
Yeah. The laws in this country are really, really oriented towards free speech, and I still don't think that I could get away with doing this. But it's done. And, you know, I don't think that we did it. But
I think Dave did it.
Well, obviously. But people have been giving us a lot of credit on Twitter. And a couple of guys came up to me and they were like, thank you.
I've had a couple of those too. And it's been – I don't know how to respond to
that. I don't know either. And like I say thank you back because it's just what I say when people are nice about the site. And then they're like, no, seriously, thank you. I'm like, this was going to happen anyway.
Yes.
I mean,
the stuff doesn't come together that quickly.
So this was going to happen anyway. And the reason it was going to happen because of who Dave Brandon is and what he's done to the athletic department. And, you know, I don't know if the public knew, the emailers knew. The national guys obviously didn't know. But I think that Schlissel knew.
Yeah, I think anybody who's been around this athletic department for any stretch of time over the last few years had at least some inclination, and Schlissel obviously just dove right into it and got very educated about everything. But, you know, we've been hearing a lot of this stuff for years.
Right. And so if he's talking to the people who know what's going on, he knows the way this department is run and the reason it's run that way. So, you know, I've had stories where a guy who knows guys who works in the athletic department, two of them got sent home for having insufficiently pressed khakis. And on a later date, he told them to get different blazers instead of that JCPenney shit. And it's just, so the reason he's gone is because that's who he is.
Yes.
And the problem that Michigan has now is that he's built a department that is personally loyal to him.
So, since he cleaned out about half of it when he came in.
Oh, more than that, because he cleaned out and then he added a bunch of people. So there's all these people who are so mad that Michigan fans have a vote. Like
They
didn't know that that was the case.
Yeah.
So you see
at a public university.
Right.
Yeah.
But we do have a vote and we exercise that vote. And for Desmond Howard to get on game day and say that this was part of a mob mentality.
Real big mom.
It's offensive to me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that is not an argument. Saying that that is a mob is not an argument.
Yeah. And one of the things that bothered me as well about this that kind of goes in line with that is, you know, the suggestion that there was some sort of personal agenda attached to the displeasure around Dave Brandon's tenure here. First of all, I don't think either of us are doing dives into Scrooge McDuck piles of money after publishing that report on Tuesday. That did not exactly happen. Dave Brandon is the one getting the $3 million buyout right now. Also, if there's anybody who'd be interested in saying nice things about Michigan, I think it'd be the fans who decided to write about it for a living and kind of, I mean, that's what we do.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is the team we follow. We got into this not because we wanted to bring Michigan down, but because we very much felt a deep connection to Michigan athletics and want to see it do well. And I think, you know, the stuff we do about basketball certainly speaks to that, where, you know, we are quite happy to celebrate the good things. But when there's stuff that is this bad going on, yeah, we're going to say something about it.
Yeah.
And the suggestion that there is some sort of agenda driving that other than wanting things to be good for the university, I mean, it's frankly sucked to write about the football program for the last few years, and it'd be nice for that not to be the case.
Well, and so this all blew up with the Shane Morris thing. And
yes.
The reason that people got mad at the athletic director is because that was handled so ham-handedly with the no concussion statement released on Sunday, the Hoke press conference where he said, we're going to have the statement and that's going to be it, and he's hung out to dry, and then the 1 a.m. press release, which is just – so – he took a very bad story about Michigan that we need to fix. He took that story and made it from a one-day story into something that was still going on 4 or 5 days later, like essentially a week. And that drags my degree through the dirt.
Yeah.
Drags everybody's degree through the dirt. And because he's not handling it like an adult, like if Desmond Howard wants to talk about a mob mentality, that's ridiculous because we have extremely good reasons why we wanted this guy gone. And he can't address those.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, it is, you know, Dave Brandon is representing the university, and he's made it very clear that, you know, Brendan Quinn asked him about our report, you know, on Tuesday night. Brandon was at a dinner receiving an award on behalf of the entire athletic department from some tourism group in Ann Arbor for bringing people in for the Winter Classic and whatnot. And Brandon's statement is, I'm here to receive an award. So you've got a couple hundred people that are working for you who also played a part in that, and that they don't apparently count.
Yeah.
And nor does anybody who's at all associated with it in terms of being connected to the university. And, you know, as somebody who went here, as somebody who has had season tickets, as somebody who had student tickets the whole time I was here, I mean, you know, this. To feel like we don't get any sort of say, to feel like we don't matter, to feel like not just that we don't matter, but that our opinion is meaningless.
Yeah.
That was tough to take. And it was very encouraging to see this week that was not the case, actually.
Well, and Schlissel from the start has always been saying the right things. So at the fireworks thing, he's like, I don't know enough, which is a great thing for a leader to say.
Yeah.
And even at this press conference, he said something along the lines of, I feel comfortable hiring deans and provosts, not so much football coaches. And I think he knows what he's good at. He knows what he needs to delegate. And obviously Dave Brandon was not.
Yeah, knowing limitations was not part of Dave Brandon's.
Not much of a delegator. Could have delegated the email to somebody else.
Mm, yeah.
But I have confidence that he's listened to the students, and the students did a great job. You know, the students really stepped up and were more adult than the athletic department through this whole thing. So first, Mike Proppy, the student government president, negotiates a better seating arrangement that probably should have been the seating arrangement in the first place, but they never talked to the students. And then Bobby Dishel negotiates much lower student ticket prices. And then Zaid El-Khalani, the guy who created the petition, wrote the petition up very professionally and then showed up at the Regents meeting to state very clearly and very professionally their problems with the athletic director. And, you know, I think that pressure really is something that Schlissel listened to with the, you know, he had the fireside chat.
Yes.
Which expanded from usually a very small group of students to, I think, 300 to 400.
And I think that got a lot moving.
Yeah.
For him.
And, you know, from the start, he was talking about the culture of this department. And for him to focus in on the water being $5 is exactly right.
Yeah. I mean, it's the things he focused on, the things that were dismissed as petty and small things, things that people shouldn't, yeah. You know, you wouldn't be worrying about this if the team was winning.
Yeah. You know,
that kind of a stuff. And Schlissel focused right in on that, saw that that was a problem that really didn't have anything to do with whether the team was winning or losing, but more just about how the athletic department was relating to the fans. And
yeah.
their customer base. You know, you hate to say it in those terms a lot of the times when we're talking about this, but that is their customer base and how they were treating them.
Well, what it's about is it's about what it feels like to be a fan.
Yeah.
And when Cokes were $4 at Yost, I would buy a Coke and I would be like, okay, I know this is overpriced, but it helps the hockey team be a team in the black, and I like the hockey team and I would like to support that. Now that they're $7. $7.
And meanwhile, the experience of being at Yost has deteriorated significantly.
Right. But, you know, I can go to Joe Louis and Cokes are $5. Yeah. And I refuse to buy a Coke for $7.
Yeah.
And it's a petty thing. It really is a petty thing. But the very pettiness of it is the reason that you shouldn't do it. You know, you need to follow through on your promises to fans, which Michigan did not do. In like, there were supposed to be 20% off concessions if you got it before puck drop, that kind of thing. They announced that in the summer and then they didn't follow up on that at all. And it's just about what it feels like. Do you feel like a sap?
And I mean, I could tell you that a lot of season ticket holders felt like saps as the market cratered this year.
Yep. And so they've chased off a waiting ticket list, and now there is no waiting ticket list. They've chased off the entire waiting list by trying to get a little bit of more money in there when that was your most valuable asset and you traded it for nothing. I mean, an ephemeral bump in the ability to get money from people.
And they, you know, price gouge students to the point where student football tickets are higher than any other team in the Big Ten, even though Michigan, I think we've noticed, is not the best team in the Big Ten. And when you're looking for future ticket holders, I mean, we've already gone through, you know, when I was in school, there was already growing apathy about the football team because the football team simply just was not doing well. There's been a whole group of four-year groups since I've been there, and that whole group had an equal amount of football failure and way more coming at them from the just being treated like crap aspect.
Yeah.
And do you know, we're already leaving school with quite a bit of debt. You know, we're already in a position where these aren't necessarily people who would be jumping at the chance to spend a bunch of money on a personal seat donation and a student ticket. But at this point, I don't see how there are any students that the recent grads who would be that interested in going and getting tickets right now, because based on their experience, why would they?
Yeah. Well, the thing is that they need to look at creating things that are unique to Michigan, at least on the college football level. So they should be trying to get young grads into a section next to the students that's standing and call it the North Stand. Do whatever you want. Make it like an MLS supporters group.
Yeah.
And try to make individual groups of Michigan fans distinct from each other so that they can do the things that they want. So all the down in front people can be in a down in front section, and all the people who want to stand can be in a standing section, and maybe – not necessarily extend the student section, but extend the spirit of the student section to another two or three sections. They need to take some steps that are actually innovative instead of Dave Brandon's constant follower.
Yeah, and that was, I mean, for all the changes that were made under this athletic department, there wasn't much innovation you know, this was all stuff that was being imported from, you know, then Hunter Lockman came from the New York Knicks. And so you get that marketing style.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen this all before. We just see it at places we don't want to be because they're not Michigan.
Yeah. And we saw a lot of complaints from the Alumni Association who just bombed Brandon on the way out.
Yeah.
About how if they wanted to go to an NFL game, they'd go to an NFL game. And I feel like we finally had enough and we've said no. And one of the things that we have to fix now that we've said no is that, you know, we're getting called muggles by people inside the program.
Yeah.
And this is a pretty recent grad phenomenon, I think.
It is.
So there's kind of this entitlement that has come over people like Taylor Lewan saying that Alejandro Zuniga sounds like a moron on the Big Ten Network. You know, Drew Dilio yelling at people that, you know, Brandon and Hoke weren't the problem. And I looked at the replies to that tweet and they were all like, what's the problem then?
Yeah.
And Elliot Mueller, who tweeted out the Muggles thing and actually had the sense to delete it, but that was up for a long time. And it's like, you know, because of the crazy structure of the NCAA, these guys don't feel like employees, but that's what they are. And that's not helping.
No. And more than that, I mean, one of the things that I really enjoyed about being in Michigan, you know, when I worked in the union, I worked with a woman who had mentored a bunch of football players and you know, was close to football players. And so like Mike Hart would come through our office in the union and I have a signed poster of Hart's Sports Illustrated cover that he personalized to me as a favor for the woman I worked with at the union. I met guys like Kevin Grady, Ryan Mundy, Jamar Adams, you know, these guys would all come through. They were all really nice guys. They were all really happy to be connected with other students in some sort of way and to be connected through the university. I mean, that, you know, these guys are wandering through the union. They, you know, they had plenty of stuff to do. They were going out of their way to kind of come in, say hi to the people that they had made connections with. And it really felt like you know, for me, you know, half of it, you know, I was totally starstruck that Mike Hart was standing right in front of me. And, you know, this is Mike Hart, football player, but it was also Mike Hart, fellow student. And at this point, it feels like there is a huge separation that has been created between you're either a Michigan athlete or you're a Michigan student.
Yeah.
And they are two very separate groups right now. And I think a lot of that has been instilled from above, where I understand that, especially in football, there is a certain benefit to having an us against the world mentality. But when you're turning that within, it creates a real serious division within your own school where people, I mean, you know, people are happy to support the football team, but it makes it much tougher when they're calling you muggles.
Yeah. And then after this game, Shane Morris tweeted out something along the lines of, thanks for the support, the students who actually stayed, and for the ones who left, we won, which is not helpful. And you have to stop looking at this as an adversarial thing. Like, the problem with Michigan's attendance is not with the students. And even if it is with the students, you can't fix that.
Like, yeah, and I mean, if the players had decided to turn around and look at the rest of the stadium, they would have noticed that that was very much not a problem specific to the students
right
on Saturday.
And like, honestly, at this point, I don't even blame people because it was cold.
It was cold.
This is a bad game against a bad team, and you're 4-5, so you're not doing anything.
And at most schools, you know, you can be shocked at the attendance this year at Michigan, but if this happened at Miami, there would have been 40 people there.
Well, and the thing is like, you can't blame a large group of people and like scold them into acting better. And this is something that I made a mistake on when I was advocating for student general admission. It's just not something that you can be like, hey, you act better and they're going to act better. You need to look internal to yourself and say, well, why are we not bringing people in? And then set out to fix that. And it seemed like the Brandon administration thought that if they played music really loud and they had flyovers from ridiculous things every time, that that would just fix everything. And then when it didn't, it was like, well, what's wrong with you? And that's just simply not a productive attitude. But it's the definition of Dave Brandon's tenure at Michigan.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it seems like there's still going to be a fair amount of work to do to undo the things that have led to the athletic department reaching this point.
Yes.
I mean, getting Dave Brandon out is the first step towards
a long cleansing period.
Yes.
All right. So let's take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk about who might be the next athletic director. Hatred is shame, racial is game, cycles of blame, someone sang this through. So we have the four Michigan guys that we've talked about. They are Brad Bates, Ward Manuel, Jeff Long, Joe Parker, and then we've had a couple of outside names thrown in the mix, one by ESPN, who suggested Jim Phillips, who's the athletic director at Northwestern.
Yes.
And then the coaching scoop guy, who's no longer with 24/7, but is still a guy who has a lot of connects, cited Joe Castiglione, who is the Oklahoma athletic director.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard some things that I would say that Bates and Long are ahead of the other Michigan man pack for, you know, a couple of reasons that just they seem like more capable professional guys to the people who knows them. And then Phillips is an interesting guy because, you know, we're talking about how Dave Brandon has put so much money into the athletic campus.
Yeah.
And Northwestern a couple of years ago announced a $250 million renovation of their own campus, which is probably more impressive than anything Brandon's done because you have to look at this is Northwestern, right? Like they're not getting 113,000 people at $95 a pop. They're struggling to sell out a much smaller stadium. They have much smaller resources. And they have a similar alumni donor base because they're a very good school.
And he's also a guy who's – I'm just looking at his bio right now, and he's a guy who's very connected with the university, it appears. He's an adjunct professor there, first of all,
really?
Which I can't imagine Dave Brandon teaching a class at this school while he's here.
What not to do 101.
He serves on the NCAA Champions Forum panel, which is a group of football coaches and athletic directors trying to increase hiring and awareness of minority football coaches. You know, he's involved in...
He's also the president of NACTA, isn't he?
Yes, he is. And he's also he's on Chicago's big committee for the 2016 Olympics, or was. So, I mean, this is a guy who's very involved both in his school and his community. And that was something that I don't think we felt with Dave Brandon. Phillips would bring a little bit of a different, more connected attitude. I think that's going to happen no matter what, yeah, obviously. But with Phillips, that's a strength.
Whoever comes in is just going to seem like a really awesome dude.
Just for not telling people to quit drinking and go to bed. That's going to be a plus.
Oh, man. Castiglione hasn't had to do much in terms of football hires because he's had Bob Stoops there forever.
Indeed.
So if you're looking at hiring stuff, there's not a whole lot that we have to go on for either of these guys. But you know, if Jim Harbaugh is available, it's a pretty quick question and answer. So would you hire Jim Harbaugh?
Yes. So. And with Castiglione, obviously with Stoops in place, that has worked out. He has won the Athletic Director of the Year twice at two different schools. He won it at Oklahoma in 2009. And then he also won it at Mizzou in 2004. So he has had success at multiple stops in this very position.
Actually, being at Mizzou in that time frame is pretty impressive.
It
because
is.
He's the guy who hired Gary Pinkel.
Yes.
And Gary Pinkel has had more success at Mizzou than I think they've had in the history of their program. And, you know, they've been up and down, and they haven't been a consistent power. But just to have the two or three or four really, really good years that Mizzou has. And Pinkel has stayed around and he's built a Mizzou culture. So I think.
And they've also been successful on the basketball court as well. And so has Oklahoma off and on, and not as much recently, but they had a nice little run there.
They've been bouncing up and down too. Yeah, the Blake Griffin years. I already wrote this column about how we get to be Blake Griffin now after we annihilated Texas. Remember that? That was fun.
Yep.
Longhorn Network just tweeting out the Shruggy. So time frame here, it is the beginning of November. So if they take the same amount of time they took to hire Brandon, which I don't think that they will, just because they have a more compressed time frame and you can get this done faster. But if
yes.
they do, that would push it into late January. If they speed it up a reasonable amount, you could see a new athletic director by early December or late December.
Which would – and
So people are saying
there's definitely going to be a search committee that's formed, but well before an athletic director is in place in terms of looking for the next coach, because you just have to get something on the way at this point, while you're looking for an athletic director, I think.
I've talked about this a little bit, but because of the nature of this recruiting class, how small it is, how they're going to have maybe two or three or four guys.
You can let the process play out a little bit more without worrying about that falling apart.
This isn't really a situation where I would be against getting a coach in January.
Yeah, and we talked last week about the fact that, you know, Harbaugh's on an NFL schedule, and, you know, if Harbaugh
and
either of the Harbaughs are the number one candidates, and yes, with Mullen in the playoff, that timeline is stretched into January, no matter what.
Yeah.
And if it's an NFL guy, it might be stretched into the end of January. So might have to wait through that. It'll be interesting to see, you know, Schlissel made it quite clear at the press conference on Friday that, the interim athletic director very much has firing power. That he has all the power that a normal athletic director would. So Jim Hackett, if, you know, he comes to the conclusion that they need to get rid of Brady Hoke at the very moment the Ohio State game ends, that might very well happen. Now getting somebody in place to replace him, we'll see. You know, it wasn't asked whether or not he would also have the ability to hire the next coach.
Yeah.
But Schlissel made it very clear that while Hackett is the interim athletic director, he has all the powers that a normal athletic director would have at this moment.
So they can still go through all the legwork that they need to do. And then the new guy has all that legwork and then has to go make a decision. And that could happen pretty quickly. So, you know, people are saying that this might give Brady Hoke an extra year. I just don't see that.
Well, and especially if Harbaugh is a very realistic option, which it seems like, you know, there's a lot of smoke there saying that he is a realistic option. I think it's a pretty simple move for the athletic director. You come in and you hand the guy a contract.
Yeah. And you advise him that in the introductory press conference, when they ask you about the academics comments, you apologize, and then you say the things that you really think about Bo.
Yes.
And that's why you're here. And that's all you have to do. All right. Should we talk about the game?
I guess.
All right, so there was a football game, and Michigan won it 34-10 against a very, very bad Indiana team.
I'll point out that it's the same score Michigan beat Miami by earlier this
year. And it kind of felt like they were playing Miami.
Yes.
Because without Nate Sudfeld, they're running Xander Diamant out there. I've never seen a quarterback who looks more like you.
And that is not a good thing if you happen to be playing football.
No, it really looked like if he got caught the wrong way by somebody, he would snap in half.
I was worried he'd be broken.
And then they took Tevin Coleman off the field for most of the first half after he fumbled a couple times, which I understand why you can't have a guy fumbling, but at the same time, it's like,
you need your offense out there.
You might bench him for a drive just so he gets his head right, but other than that, you got to go with him.
Yeah, that was a lot longer than a drive, and they were quick three and outs when they were putting him on the bench.
So I don't know how much we can take from this game. I mean, Indiana was so bad that Michigan decided not to take a timeout when they could have saved 30 seconds at the end of the first half, and then they got the ball back with 70 seconds left in the half, plenty of time to go have a 2-minute drill, and they just ran out the clock. And I was fine with that because it was
I was a little less fine than that because I would have liked to see Hoke get something right and go for the kill shot there. But
I don't even think that would have been right because we just saw Devin Gardner almost throw a pick six.
Threw a real, real bad pass to the flat. That is true. But Michigan also, the thing is against Indiana, I think they almost could have just run the ball into field goal position. They Justice Hayes broke a big run on that drive, and then it was like, oh crap, I wish we had more time.
Yeah, I don't know. I just felt like, I mean, they had 50 yards of offense. Michigan was up 3 scores. At that point, it was just like, let's run the clock out.
There's definitely, and at least hearing Hoke in the postgame presser have a full explanation for that, and it was that explanation, was encouraging because he was at least aware of the situation and maybe even fully aware of the situation.
God. This year is just going to, everybody who's a Michigan fan this year is going to have so many catchphrases for when things go badly. I mean, there's quit drinking and go to bed. There's aware but not fully aware.
Mild but probable.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a few.
Oh, but so this was a game against a tomato can. And as soon as Indiana lost Sudfeld, you know, their prospects evaporated this year. And I feel bad for them, honestly, because they had one of the best quarterback situations in the league until two guys transferred and Sudfeld goes out for the year.
Yeah, you got to wonder what Trey Roberson's thinking right now.
Whoops.
Yeah.
I think that's probably what he's thinking.
Yeah, because him and Coleman in the backfield would be pretty spectacular.
I actually don't think that Roberson transferred voluntarily. because he was already splitting time with Sudfeld. You know, I think that he probably was asked to leave the team, or
that seems like a very bad idea.
Failed to maintain eligibility.
Yeah.
So, because otherwise that doesn't make any sense. But then
it doesn't, especially when you, now that we've seen what their backup quarterback situation looked like, and it's disastrous.
Bad. Yeah. So the main storyline out of this game is Drake Johnson, who came off the bench and ran for a bunch of yards, and now everybody is mad at Fred Jackson somehow, because Fred Jackson can't win.
No, like, he can't, because he did offer the guy.
Right.
And he was the dude who stepped up to bat and vouched for him.
And everybody's like, why hasn't he been on the field before? Fire Fred Jackson. So my take on this is everybody needs to slow their roll here.
Yeah, and I'm inclined to want Drake Johnson to do as well as possible, because the dude is from my high school.
Oh, who cares about your high school?
Pioneer has not had a spectacular amount of success in football over the years. You know, so to have somebody succeed at Michigan, it's very cool to sit in that press box, to look over and see Holloway Field, and then to look down and see somebody who was playing on that field.
Why do you have loyalty to your high school? This is a foreign concept.
It's an Ann Arbor thing. It really is. I mean, growing up in Ann Arbor and then going to Michigan, there is a certain connection with the people who are also from Ann Arbor. And you get that with the two high schools, because we have a nice, a fun rivalry with each other. I mean, I went to the elementary and middle schools that split off perfectly evenly between the two high schools. So there are people on both sides, but it's cool to see someone who dressed up in the purple and white get out there, put on that winged helmet, and actually get out there and have a really big day like that.
The purple and white. I didn't even know what their colors were. but I don't know if this is going to be sustainable.
Neither do I. And I will say that, you know, having watched Drake Johnson in high school a little bit, I didn't think the stuff I saw from him on Saturday was stuff that I think he would have been successful with no matter what, in terms of they're getting him stretch runs to the outside where
he has a big hole.
He's got a big hole. All he's got to do is put his foot in the ground and use that track star speed. And he's got tremendous speed and he's got good size. And at that point, you can run through a couple arm tackles and you're going to get downfield. And I actually think when he committed to Michigan, I was worried because, you know, they were talking man ball. And I think in a gap blocking scheme, he is not necessarily the back you want. In a zone blocking scheme, there's more potential there for him just because he's not a huge wiggle guy. I think when you see it, when we go back and look at the tape, he's definitely a one cut guy. And in the open field, if he's asked to break a guy down, it's not necessarily going to happen, but he can get upfield.
And he tries to jump over them, which is alarming.
He's a hurdler. Yeah. I guess that it's tough to kill that instinct, but,
I mean, I've read a lot of message boards in the aftermath of the game, and people are comparing him to Mike Hart, I think, cause he wears 20. I'm just like, no,
too soon and not at all stylistically similar. But I think he's a guy who requires a certain level of blocking to succeed. Now, obviously that goes for all backs, but I think that goes for him a little bit more than most.
Right. Cause he's not going to get 3 yards after contact.
Yeah. Like, and he's not going to break a couple tackles in the backfield, to get to the line.
But I think
that said, it was encouraging. I mean, he certainly brings a level of explosiveness that you're not getting from Davion Smith, and even Justice Hayes doesn't quite have the size-speed combination that Drake Johnson has.
Yeah, if I had to bet, I would bet this is something that we're going to look back at. I was like, oh, remember that game when Drake Johnson went nuts against Indiana? Yeah,
this might end up being the Drake Johnson game, and that'll be fine. It was a great moment for the guy.
Yeah, it's nice to break 100 yards in the big house in a win.
Yes.
We'll have to see. I mean, the way he cuts makes me think that this is not going to be something sustainable against better defenses.
I would agree with that. And while we're on the topic of running backs, I think it should be pointed out that Justice Hayes had a freaking awesome day on Saturday in blitz pickup.
He did. I wonder if he was good at that last year. Because if he was,
so do I.
Like, what were they thinking?
I don't know. I mean, it seems like either he had a massive improvement in that regard, or he was at least better than what they had out there last year.
Yeah, it had to be better than what they had out there last year.
I mean, you know, a piece of wet cardboard was better than what they had out there last year. But
you know, I just think that they have such a bias against smaller running backs that
I think that's been made pretty clear.
Yeah. So another interesting thing, we saw Magnuson out there in 81 as a tight end.
That was fun to see on the sideline.
He wandered out, and I was like, who the hell is 81? I thought he was a walk-on for a while, and then I saw his nameplate, and I was like, oh.
And the second coming of Kwiatkowski, but no, it was Eric Magnuson.
God, I would take Kwiatkowski all day on this team.
Oh, yeah, that'd be nice.
But so they had some six offensive line packages, and those worked a little bit. They were doing the kind of Wisconsin thing where they'd have one guy in the backfield and then everybody else was on the line to give you as many gaps as possible, which seemed like a debatably wise thing to do with a Devion Smith who can miss some cuts.
Yes.
But maybe Johnson was better at finding the hole. I really have to go look at the tape before I say anything definitive because, you know, sometimes you get 20 yards and those 20 yards are all the offensive line, and sometimes you get 20 yards and that's you.
Especially when you're dealing with a guy who's that fast.
Yeah. Well, his speed, actually, I mean, that tax on yards, of course, but, you know, whatever. On the defensive side of the ball, this was pretty much a layup that they made. No Willie Henry, but they still shut off the Tevin Coleman machine, even when he was on the field.
Yeah, and, I mean, they held him to 4 yards a carry on 27 carries, and he was averaging 8.8 this year heading into this game. That was his lowest yardage total of the year. He had 108, so that must be nice.
He's a good player.
He's a hell of a player.
I don't know how he ends up at Indiana because it seems like tailback would be the one place where you would manage to be like, all right, that guy has an awesome size speed combination. Let's get him. But who knows? So I don't really know what you can say about the defensive back since there are only 8 passing attempts by Diamant in this game.
Yeah. I don't think there's much to say there.
Incomplete.
The front seven I thought did really well. I think Jake Ryan, I believe he's now leading the Big Ten in tackles for loss.
That's
2.5.
Really interesting. I couldn't get the Michigan State defensive UFR up, but it's done because of the Brandon stuff. And I don't think he was good against Michigan State at all. But he keeps racking up tackles for loss and stuff, but he just doesn't feel natural as a linebacker. And I it's much easier when I'm going against the grain on a guy positively.
Yeah.
But I just don't think that even though he's got the numbers, you know, the coverage and the ability to read and react. And in this game, he didn't have to do that.
No, he didn't. He was able to just shoot the gaps because he knew what Indiana was going to run for the most part. He does still retain the ability to make those. He forced 2 fumbles. I mean, he is a big play guy in that regard.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was at least one of his better games. I would say that the opponent certainly helped there. Bolden also had a strong game with a couple tackles for loss and a sack.
Yeah.
You know, the front, I think, it was good to see Brian Monet out there have a pretty strong game, I thought.
Yeah.
Where he was quite disruptive on the inside, came up with the fumble recovery, which is, you know, he put his hands on the football, but.
Well, then Glasgow had the sack strip recovery all on his own.
Which is, that was probably the most impressive play by a front seven player on the
day. And then Brian Mack is like, give him the order of St. Kovacs already. He's already got it.
Yeah, he's there.
He's been enshrined in the order
honor
of St.
has been
Kovacs.
Bestowed. He does not have a walk-on tag on our little diagram before the game.
That is correct.
Yeah.
So, yeah, stop being completely inaccurate about me, employee of mine. I feel like Dave Brandon. I threaten you from the mountaintop.
Indirectly, though, over, you know, we'll get somebody else to tell Brian.
Without actually communicating it to you. I'll just be blindsided by it. You've got 5 minutes. Here's a box. Get out.
Oh, man.
I would never do that to Brian.
No. I would hope
or
not.
Or would I?
No, I'm going to slowly back off here.
Oh, no. We got a good team, man.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
All right, this is getting creepy. Maybe we should talk to Jimmy.
Don't know how I survived. The crew all was chewed alive. I must have slipped between his teeth. But oh, what providence. What divine intelligence that you should survive as well as me. It gives my heart great joy to see your eyes filled with fear. So lean in close and I will whisper the last words you'll hear. Oh.
We welcome in Jamie Mack of Just Cover Blog. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing fine, guys. Kind of a snoozer day in the Big Ten. A lot of blowouts. It was good to see Michigan actually blow somebody out. That seemed unique, but watching Indiana get blown out by somebody in the Big Ten was hardly a new experience.
Yeah. So let's start with Ohio State, Illinois. Never mind. I mean, this is exactly what everybody was going to expect from this game, right? Just
he had little chance at extending his Big Ten winning streak to two games. That was pretty much off the table.
Yeah, so that was that game. Wisconsin blows out Rutgers. Rutgers' offense is a complete train wreck. The only thing I can take for this game is wonder at the fact that Gary Nova threw for 400 yards against us.
Oh, I know. Wisconsin had 5.1 yards per attempt passing in the game, and that was twice as much as Rutgers.
Wow.
Yeah, Rutgers ended up with 2.1.
How did that happen? Wow.
Well, if you added zero onto the end of Gary Nova's yardage total, it looks a lot like his total against Michigan.
Yeah.
How many attempts did he have?
15, and he threw for 46 yards.
Yeah.
Then they brought in his backup, Chris Caviano, and he went 2 for 12 for 17 yards.
We gave up 400 yards to this team.
Yeah.
That we did, and they didn't even have their running back at the time either, and they still don't.
Not a pretty sight. On Wisconsin end, it was pretty much business as usual. You know, they just destroyed a Big Ten weakling. They had 200-yard rushers. That was the 13th time in the last 31 games that they've had at least two 100-yard rushers. And when they can do that, their average margin of victory is 35 points, and they score, you know, well over 45 points a game. So, welcome to the Big Ten, Rutgers. Every time you play Wisconsin, this is going to be your fate. Just ask Purdue and Indiana and Illinois.
Amen. Nebraska beats Purdue fairly comfortably. I don't really have anything to say about this game either. Just this is what was expected, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, the big story is Abdullah going out with an injury, and they don't play again until 2 weeks when they play Wisconsin. So, you know, early reports are that it's really not going to be a factor, the injury. But I, from a guy who, you know, likes to pick games and figure all that stuff out, I kind of wish Nebraska had a game on Saturday so we could see just how healthy he is.
All right, moving on to the blowout of some interest to us is Iowa completely annihilating Northwestern. Northwestern is, of course, our next opponent, and they beat Penn State pretty handily. So Iowa putting the spurs to them is somewhat unexpected.
Oh, this game, disaster from the start. You know, we were going to watch a Big Ten game at the tailgate, so I said to myself, which one of these do I want to bet on? And I'm like, I like Northwestern always as an underdog, and they always have Iowa's number. Oh, boy, about 10 minutes after I made that bet, it was 14-0 Iowa, and I was already like, well, at least our tailgate's fun. I'm not going to watch the rest of the new football.
Well, you missed the rest of their 38 first-half points against Northwestern.
I know.
That is Iowa scoring 38 points in a half, all on offense this time, as opposed to their outburst a couple weeks ago against Indiana when they got a pick six in there to help the scoring total.
It was all on offense. How many yards did they have?
They finished with 483 yards to Northwestern's 180. And I think there was no scoring in the third quarter. I mean, it was just a second half shutdown. A running back named Akram Wadley, who's a redshirt freshman, I didn't even know they got down this far in the 247 composite, but the number 2,525 overall player in the 2013 class.
Wow.
He had 106 yards on 15 carries for Iowa.
Akram Wadley.
Yeah, average 7 yards a carry. They might want to look at him over Weissman. Who knows? Although Weissman also had a pretty solid day himself.
Akram Wadley.
That was Iowa's big offensive star. Yeah.
Akram Wadley.
Ruddick had 12.6 yards per attempt. I just get a kick out of seeing that. That's what he did against Indiana, but I guess it's a little bit more impressive against Northwestern. I mentioned a couple weeks ago the upcoming Iowa-Minnesota game, which is this weekend. You know, the winner of that game is going to have a chance to win out against Nebraska and Wisconsin and steal this division. And since Nebraska and Wisconsin already have one loss and they haven't played each other yet, one of them will have two, so the tiebreakers might even work out if they only go 1-1. So I don't really know if you want to tout Iowa-Minnesota as an interesting Big Ten showdown with divisional playoff implications, but it kind of does.
Yeah, wow.
Iowa is in a better position because they actually host Nebraska and Wisconsin, or rather it's Wisconsin-Nebraska in back-to-back weeks. Minnesota has to go to both those teams. But, you know, Iowa is a win away against Minnesota and then basically a win away at home against Wisconsin from playing for spot in Indianapolis the day after Thanksgiving against Nebraska. So
is the Nebraska the presumed favorite out of this group just because they have a half-game advantage right now?
Yeah, they have the most functional quarterback, I think. I mean, offense.
Yeah.
Yeah, they better go with Abdullah. They're saying mild MCL sprain, so that's something he should be able to come back from. But that's very well timed bye week.
13 days. They have home field advantage in that game, right? The Wisconsin Nebraska game's in Lincoln, correct?
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah. So that's a pretty big edge. You know.
Actually, I take that back. That game.
I know we already talked about them, but a week or two ago, you know, we mentioned when they played Maryland that wow, you know, they passed the ball right out of the gate in the first half. They had a nice, you know, yards per attempt, but they just, you know, Stave was, he really looked bad against Rutgers yesterday. So, I mean, I think when those two teams play, you know, I think they do have a quarterback edge with Armstrong, and if Abdullah's healthy, you know, I mean, I think he and Gordon will probably just, you know, net each other out. But I think Nebraska is a winner in that game, but the last time I saw a point spread in that game, Wisconsin was still like four and a half point favorites, so.
Well, they got home field there at least, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It's weird to hear Tommy Armstrong providing a decided quarterback advantage for Nebraska, but here we are.
Well, this Wisconsin thing is just so weird, you know. I mean, you know, Stave suddenly, you know, having the yips, and he can't play, and McAvoy, you know, seriously can't pass. I mean, they went. Stave was 5.1 yesterday yards per attempt, but that I don't know. It's just
you know. I mean, when that sounds kind of good,
you feel like Wisconsin could be a legitimate top 20 team. You know, kind of a big-time factor, but they haven't really had quarterback play in the last couple seasons.
What happened to Bart Houston?
It's just been getting worse.
What happened to Bart Houston? Bart Houston was his name was Bart Houston, and he was a quarterback from Texas, and it was just like, he was even like a four-star.
I mean, he redshirted in 2012. I think he threw one pass last year, and he's thrown one this year.
How bad must Bart Houston be? Pretty bad.
One for one with a touchdown pass against Western Illinois. Come on. You gotta ride that wave.
Moving on to Maryland, Penn State. Maryland wins this game with a field goal in the last minute to pull ahead 19-20. I mean, 2019. You know what I mean.
Sure.
Christian Hackenberg spends most of this game screaming at people on the sideline.
Yes, he did.
Looks like he's completely losing it. I understand why he might be completely losing it, but there's some issues going on there at Penn State that go even beyond the fact that they don't have an offensive line.
Yeah. It was a typical Penn State game. You know, they score their one offensive touchdown. They move in field goal range, and Figgin can hit those. And Hackenberg is just running around forever, and you hope that maybe they can hit enough big plays to Hamilton and Lewis to pull it out, and they obviously didn't do that yesterday. Maryland is showing its Big Ten class, obviously. They won a Big Ten game despite making only one third down conversion and only having 194 total yards.
Yeah, the numbers from this game are just ridiculous. You mentioned the third down. You mentioned the total yards. They average 4.2 yards a pass. They average 1.1 yards a rush on 33 carries.
And they won?
And they won.
I've seen that one.
Big Ten! Yep. Big Ten.
Yeah.
We're bad in this league. This is a league we are bad in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're looking ahead to this Maryland game. Like, that's going to be close.
Yeah. And there was, there was a little bit of action though before this game. The teams kind of started jawing with each other, and Maryland refused to shake the Penn State players' hands during
that. That was so awesome.
During the coin flip, and it's interesting, you know, you read the various blogs post game. You know, the Maryland blogs are just on top of the pedestal, saying, "Yes, that was awesome. It, you know, set the tone." Blah blah blah. And the Penn State blogs aren't really talking about it. They already kind of want to fire a bunch of their coaches, so they're talking more about that.
Yeah, I just love it when Maryland tries to act like Miami in its heyday. It's just hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Randy Edsall is the coach.
Big post game, like, this is the rivalry now. I was just like, I was like, hey, listen, we don't need another Mark Antonio near the Mason-Dixon line there, guy. Come on, let's dial it back.
I wonder how much James Franklin's connection to Maryland played into their attitude heading into that game. You wonder if there's something underlying there.
Yeah, that's going to be a pretty good little mini rivalry there, as long as Penn State continues sucking as much butt as Maryland does.
Yeah, I mean, they're clearly on about the same level right now, program-wise, so.
They're going to need to hustle, I think, here just to get to a bowl game in Franklin's year. I wish I was looking at their schedule. I know they have to play State at the end of the year. That's a, you know, a loss.
They are.
I know they play Indiana. That's probably a win.
Here's their schedule. I mean, they got at Indiana this weekend. Then they have a very random non-conference game at home against Temple, which is probably going to help them quite a bit in the bowl eligibility quest. And then they go at Illinois, so that also helps.
Oh, yeah, they should make it.
And then their last game is them losing to Michigan State at home in horrific fashion, most likely.
But I wouldn't Don't sleep on Temple. Temple just beat East Carolina yesterday.
That's true.
Yeah.
Penn State are in that competition invariant point with this offense.
I wonder if Franklin is going to get Rodriguez here, where like he walks into a terrible situation his first year, and he does it so much worse than fans are expecting because O'Brien held the team together for a couple years.
Yeah.
And now is their crater. But this is always going to be their crater. It's not Franklin's fault.
Yeah, when you look at the depth on this team, I think Penn State themselves actually put out an infographic thing that they tweeted out about their after the Ohio State game. It was the improvement that they had in performance against them compared to last year, while also having – and then they also showed how many players were still on scholarship and that, just how cratered the depth chart was and how few upperclassmen they have on this team. I mean – they show that, there is very much progress being made here in terms of doing decent with what you got there.
Yeah.
But who knows if Franklin's going to really get the full chance there because it is really horrible to watch.
I'll be interested to see if the all Big Ten teams give Penn State's defense its proper props.
Because they kick ass.
Yeah, because Mike Hall is an All-American level player.
That guy getting left off of the Butkus.
It's crazy.
Semifinal in favor of Jake Ryan. I think Jake Ryan is a fine linebacker. He is doing half as well as Mike Hull this year.
And Zettel is also like a super, super good player who should be on Michigan.
Zettel, he makes plays every time I'm focused in on Penn State, he's making a play.
Yep. But when you're so bad, even the parts of your team that aren't bad tend to not get much attention.
That'll be interesting to see. They do remind me a little bit, in reverse of the 2010 Michigan team. I think that the Penn State defense might be a little bit higher end than the Michigan offense was, but those are numbers and memories that just won't get its due because the other side of the ball was just so awful. You can't win, and that's what's going on with Penn State. Their offensive numbers are all in the 120s, it seems like, at least all the important ones. And, at least they're making their field goals. If they were making their field goals, they wouldn't be in any of these games.
Yep. So Sam Ficken for the win. Michigan plays Indiana. Indiana is just no longer a threat to anybody without Sudfeld.
No.
Game kind of plays out like you'd expect.
Yeah, exactly. They only threw the ball 8 times. They just weren't interested, it seemed like, in attempting any offense. It was, I don't really know what they're supposed to do in that spot. And making the Indiana fan in me's mood even worse is Roberson is kicking butt at Illinois State. He's got them steamrolling towards a pretty good seed in the FCS tournament. So, yay.
Yeah, I can't imagine that he left Indiana voluntarily. I mean, is that the sense that you get?
Yeah. I get the sense that that he and Wilson just didn't get along, and he wanted more time at quarterback. He didn't want to split any time, and so he just sort of bolted. I think he kind of bolted in a fit, given the timing. But, I think that I don't think they were giving him his due. I said this for a couple different times along the last couple of years, especially when he went out with an injury, that Wilson from the get-go preferred Sudfeld and Kaufman right off the bat going into 2012. So they've never really seen eye to eye. It's almost as if Hoke, for example, had a viable alternative, like virtually the same age, that could do – if there was a legitimate plan B, kind of what we might have seen the last year and a half with Gardner's relationship with the coaches, he might have, just not felt he would ever get his due, Kind of rambling there, sorry.
Yeah, no problem. Once it was clear that Indiana had no passing game, this game was basically over, and it was just a matter of time waiting for Michigan to have their offense be competent enough to pull away. So
I think it was good. The rush defense, their numbers get maligned a little bit because of the way they played against Minnesota and Michigan State. I thought they did a good job against Campbell. He's a home run hitter, and his longest gain was 17 yards. I mean, he even hit a couple home runs against Michigan State when that defense, knew that Diamant was a sitting duck back there. So I thought that was nice. And, the positive Devin Gardner stat of the weekend is there were 6 Big Ten conference games with 12 quarterbacks, actually more like 13 or 14, as different people subbed in, and he had the second best yards per attempt. So there you go.
Hooray.
Hooray. And I like, the fact that Darbo got 100 yards. That was nice. Hopefully we can maybe look back at this as maybe his breakout game.
Yeah,
all this is a memory.
If he gets some separation, he's got nice hands. But I'm still worried that against better defensive backs, they're just going to be in his back pocket the whole game. But, you know, people develop. We'll see.
Do you want to talk at all about Michigan State, Ohio State real quickly?
Is that next week?
That's next week.
No. I mean, I guess. Okay, go.
Well, I was just going to say, I noticed something that I hadn't really noticed at all year, but both these teams are 7-1 against the over. They're combined 14-2 against the over. I just thought that was interesting. So maybe we'll get a Big Ten game with some, you know, scoring and some fun back and forth.
It'll be interesting because Oregon kind of has a similar offense. They're not quite as power-based as Ohio State, but they really put that cover four to the test by going deep against the slots. Yeah. And Ohio State has some guys who can replicate that.
Yeah, you got Devin Smith out there looking to take the top off the defense.
Can Barrett hold up? I mean, I've done a 180 a little bit so many times on this game. And, you know, the way he struggled against Penn State, I mean, is that going to be a factor?
I mean, it's obviously going to be a factor. He's not done great against great defenses, but, you know, they're still going to be probing at some weaknesses that a team like Michigan just couldn't hope to exploit. So it's about hitting those guys over the top, which Barrett struggled against Virginia Tech, but it was a different defense for Virginia Tech, and those passes were more contested. And Ohio State's offense is good at putting those safeties in a run-pass conflict.
Also, looking at the FEI numbers, Penn State's defense is actually better than Michigan State's defense this year.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me at all.
No. And based on the eye test, that really isn't a surprise. They are really, really, really dang good.
They are.
Well, you know, that's interesting that you bring up, you know, that fact base, because I kind of thought after the Penn State game that maybe the future line would bulge a little bit towards Michigan State, but it stayed at -3.5. You know, now we'll see where it, you obviously are going to see so much more betting in game week. We'll see where it opens up, you know, game week. But that's interesting. You know, I mean, you know, the books have all those numbers. You know, they know that maybe the Penn State defense could be better than the Michigan State's defense, and they didn't even budge the line, because I kind of thought that game, because you know, I was ready to tweet out what's the worst loss, losing to Penn State or Virginia Tech. You know, so I mean, I just sort of thought the public perception of the Buckeyes was back to being sort of where it was post Hokie week, as far as that offense, but the books didn't move that line.
Yeah, I mean, I think they understand that Penn State's defense is very, very good, and one big difference between Penn State's defense and Michigan State's defense, PSU has not given up much in the way of big plays this year. Michigan State has a little bit. They've got a little bit of last year's Ohio State defense in them, where you just get the occasional bust in the secondary where things go big. And for Ohio State, that might be all it takes for them to come out with the win there.
Yep.
Here's something though too that I think is interesting, and I mean, we don't really need any more evidence to pile on that the Big Ten is obviously so at best, but next weekend's schedule is pretty stacked. This has been the showdown for the Big Ten, you know, all along, no doubt, and it's maybe the fifth best game of this coming weekend, maybe even the sixth, depending on if you want to put Oregon, Utah, you know, ahead of it. But with, you know, LSU, Alabama, TCU and Kansas State and Oklahoma, Baylor, and Notre Dame, Arizona State. You know, this is the showdown for our league. Clearly, the two best teams, and it maybe cracks the top five in top games for the weekend. At least in my opinion. Maybe I'm secretly trolling. I don't know.
I don't know. You got Oregon, Utah in there as well. I mean, that's an intriguing game. I mean, you could definitely make the argument that the Big Ten's biggest game of the year falls outside the top five of that weekend slate of games.
And that is the Big Ten fact of the year. All right, we will talk to you in the near future, Jamie.
Oh, all right, cool. Maybe if they win next week, we'll talk about the bowl destinations for Michigan, whether or not we want to go to New York City to play at Yankee Stadium or stay at home and play at Fort. Let's get one more win in first, right?
I'll be staying at home regardless, Jamie.
All right. Thank you, Jamie. That an old account was abandoned, or sin yet unforgiven. My name was at the top. There were many things below, but I went unto the keeper, and I settled it long ago, yes, long ago. I settled it all. I said the old account was settled long ago, and the record's clear today. He washed my sins away, and the old account was settled long ago. Tell him about it, sister.
Thank you for listening to the MGo podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook, and I will take the easy cheap shot here and wish Dave Brandon a happy life.
The game is over.